This is LifeMint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. So the first story we'll start with is the big one about how Flipkart bought Jabong for $70 million and what it means for Flipkart, which already had Myntra under its belt, and what it means for the competition.
I think it's one of those surprising deals, right? Over the last few weeks, there have been a lot of names mentioned as a possible acquirer of Jabong. And Flipkart wasn't really one of them. And it looked like Snapdeal would end up buying Myntra because Snapdeal was not very strong in the fashion segment, and I think it made sense. Right. But then Flipkart went ahead and did this, right? So I think it's important to look at this whole deal from four or five different perspectives. The first one, of course, is from the Snapdeal perspective. I think losing the deal puts them definitely at a disadvantage. Irrespective of what the company's managers might say, is that they've stopped looking at gross merchandise value, which is the value of products traded, and they're looking at net revenue that they're making, which is a different metric, which probably explains a sort of a slowdown, which again, they claim it's not happening. Irrespective of what they may say, however, I think what's true is that Snapdeal seems to have lost out a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I think this Jabong loss, the fact that they didn't get to buy Jabong, will set them back a little bit more. So that's one. The second thing is to look at it from the perspective of Flipkart. Flipkart is desperate to shore up its numbers and build share at a time when Amazon has really almost taken the lead in India. And I think the approaches of the two companies are very different. Amazon has tried to have as many sellers on its platform as possible, and it has also focused hugely on the customer experience. Right. They just rolled out Amazon Prime, for instance. Yeah. And I think I can say from personal experience that Amazon's customer service is excellent. Whereas Flipkart, I think, has decided that building scale, maybe through acquisitions, mm-hmm. is the way to go. And so I think it's interesting to look at these slightly different strategies. What is also important to look at is what's happening in Jabong. This is about Jabong's founders. This is about Jabong's promoters. It's about what the company has been through. And I think the valuation of the company has come down significantly, right? I mean, at one point in time, they were asking, I'm told, well over $1 billion, then came down to around $500-600 million. And then the deal finally gets done for $70 million. And I think it's a function of irresponsible and imprudent management, complete lack of corporate governance, as has been coming out. And this is yet another Rocket Internet company. And the history of Rocket Internet's investments in India, I mean, you can write a book on all the various governance issues and process issues that are there.
Right.
So I think it's important to look at it from that perspective also. And I think bottom line is, this is an ecosystem and a business where valuations can rise in a few days. And it's evident from Jabong's example that they can also fall in a few days. The fourth perspective to look at is from the larger ecosystem perspective. What does this mean for the ecosystem? I think this is a natural evolution of the ecosystem into what could be the beginning of a phase of consolidation, where a lot of investors, some of them are venture capitalists, some of them are hedge funds, but some of them are just promoters, like Rocket Internet, for instance, probably want to exit investments because they don't see their companies eventually surviving in this business. Mm. And it hasn't become an epidemic yet, this whole phase. I mean, it's not, you can see the beginning of the trend, but it hasn't gathered momentum yet. But I think you will see that happening over the next few months.
Right.
So all in all, I think it was one of those big stories of the week. It was something which surprised everyone, which is always good, right?
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise there'd be no fun.
Probably keep Amazon also on its toes with this.
Maybe, but I think Amazon is fairly clear in terms of what it wants to do in India. And I would be very surprised if they went around acquiring companies of the scale of Jabong. Because for someone like Amazon, I think the acquisition has to be much bigger for it to make real sense, even in India.
Right. Moving on, we move to this liberalization series, which we've been carrying for a number of months, where we talk to different people who have sort of documented the shift in their industries due to liberalization. From air hostesses to wedding planners to even Fab India's William Bissell and, you know, different people. So what did you think of this?
And we've also been doing a series of interviews and stories where we are looking at what's happening to specific industries. We've got experts from Bain to collaborate with us on a series of articles and interviews on how the last 25 years have been and what's changed. I think liberalization is in the news again because this is its 25th anniversary, and it was in July 1991 that the big changes in industrial policy were made. I think many of us now take it for granted that you can just start a company without having a license.
Right.
Whereas previously, to produce anything in this country or to do anything in this country, you needed a license. And I think the changes are significant. If you look at it, I think the India of 1991 is very different from the India of today. The economy has almost quadrupled in size since then. It's no longer an extremely poor economy. Per capita incomes have gone up. There has been a rash of consumption or a significant amount of consumption by people in certain economic groups. I think the rich have benefited significantly, probably the most, but the middle class has also benefited. You now have a bigger middle class what you once had previously. So the consumption of products and services has increased. You can see a difference in what people wear, where people live. I mean, you go out on the streets today in every city in India, every person is probably carrying a backpack. You know, 1991, I don't think anyone carried a backpack, right? So you know, even small things have changed. Everyone wears sneakers now. In 1991, you would have been hard-pressed to see people wearing sneakers, right? Everything has changed at the level of consumption in businesses, in the kind of businesses that are there. If you look at the top companies by market capitalization back then, you had a lot of industrial companies. The IT companies were yet to make their mark. Mm. 1991, none of the IT companies had even gone public.
Yeah.
In fact, Infosys went public in the early 90s, and the only reason it was able to go public was because of liberalization, because the controller of capital issues was abolished. And along with that went the retrograde rules that said you needed to have a track record of profitability to sell shares to the public, which Infosys didn't have. So I think there's been significant and radical change. And at Mint, like you said, we've captured this in two broad ways. One is a series of articles and expert articles, as well as on-ground reportage and interviews in collaboration with Bain. And the other one is through a podcast series called Days of Our Lives, where we've actually looked at how lives of Indians, both common and not so common, or rather both ordinary and not so ordinary, has changed over the last 25 years.
Right. And in fact, the last piece which we carried, which was about all these children of liberalization, and the main thing which sort of emerged was how much, you know, in terms of the opportunities they've had.
Yeah, the choices before them are tremendous. These are people who were born in 1991. I mean, they've never known a pre-1991 existence, because by the time they were born and by the time they reached the age of 5 or 6, I'm sure, you know, their parents, especially given the backgrounds of some of these people, are likely to have benefited from liberalization, and these people have known nothing else.
Yeah.
Because what happens when an economy grows? When an economy grows every year, at least for people in the middle class and people who are in the upper middle class and the rich, salaries increase every year, right? By a significant amount. And I think through the 90s, they went up by leaps and bounds. In IT companies, used to give out quarterly hikes at one point in time, if you remember. And these are all people who've benefited from those. And right now, of course, they have tremendous choice before them. Right? They can do whatever they want to do. It's not this old thing of write IAS, write UPSC, write bank exams, or become an engineer or a doctor or a chartered accountant. Now, if you want to, you can become a fitness instructor if you want to, a stand-up comedian if you want to. I mean, the world has moved on.
Right. So the next story is about new funds and how all these new private equity sector funds are, you know, launching new funds, raising money.
Yeah, there has been, over the last year or so, there have been a lot of private equity fund managers who left their funds and gone out to start funds of their own. And obviously, they're out there in the market trying to raise funds. There are around a dozen of them, maybe more right now. And they're trying to raise around $2 billion, which is a significant amount of money.
Right.
Not easy to raise money. But the fact is, investors are interested. Limited partners or the people who invest in these funds are interested. And I think the reason they're interested is because they're interested in India, and they're also interested in the kind of companies in which these funds could possibly invest.
Right.
And I think that is a sign of confidence in the country, in its policies, in the government of the day. So it's a good sign. It's one of those positive signs that you see ever so rarely these days. I think it's also a reaffirmation of where India stands in the global scheme of things, right? Because Europe is not in a great place. The US is all right, but it's drifting along, right, in some ways. And I think the one bright spot is really India. China has slowed down. The one bright spot is really India. So I think the reason why these people are investing, and the reason why they are happy to invest even in new funds, is because of that.
But it's also a challenge to for first-time funds to sort of rope in, you know, commitments.
Correct. I mean, it's very difficult. So obviously, some of the first-time funds are obviously giving their limited partners better deals.
Right.
They're charging less fees. They're taking a lesser share of profits and things like that. But I think some of them will do pretty well, because some of these funds are being promoted by fund managers who've actually done very well in other private equity funds.
So linked to the liberalization story is another piece which we did on how liberalization has affected the average Indian diet. And is it any different today than what it was in 1991?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. What it shows is that it shows something very different, right? What would you expect? You would expect protein consumption to hugely go up.
Right.
Not really. I think what you're noticing is that consumption of fruits and vegetables has really gone up. Protein consumption has not really gone up hugely. And I think that is extremely significant, because if you look at China, for instance, in China, the consumption of protein has gone up significantly. Everyone eats pork in China. Previously, only the rich used to eat pork, and they used to eat it once in 5 days or 6 days.
Right.
A few times a month, maybe. Now you have people in China, we eat pork almost every day. And this includes not just the rich, but also the middle class, sometimes even the not so middle class, the poor people.
Mm.
Whereas in India, we are noticing that people are consuming more fruits and vegetables. Within meat, they're consuming less of mutton, less of beef, and consuming more of chicken. But the overall consumption of meat remains more or less the same. So we're not seeing the kind of radical change in diet the Chinese did. We are seeing a significant change, but not a radical change. Of course, I think the numbers would be very different if you were to just take the salaried middle class and look at what has happened there.
Mm.
And I think there you'll probably see a trend which is a little similar to China's. But then I think at the national level, the big change that is coming across is the increased consumption of fruits and vegetables.
Right. Even eggs.
And eggs.
Eggs.
Yeah.
Keep remembering that ad.
That's
Rose
right.
Cow
I mean,
day.
I mean, the National Egg Coordination Committee had this very catchy jingle,
right,
I think, in the 90s, pushing the consumption of eggs, and it obviously seems to have worked.
Yeah.
And of course, the consumption of eggs has also worked because most state governments have midday meal schemes in government schools. And I think some of the states are now reconsidering whether they should give eggs or not,
right,
largely for religious reasons and not for any scientific reasons. I think most states continue to give eggs along with lunch. And I think that also helps the increase in consumption of eggs.
Right. So the final story we discuss is the Facebook one, where its results were as expected good. It had a great quarter, but the numbers, of course, pointed out to a different thing, which is sort of, you know, more bad news for
print.
US print media.
And what happens to US print media will eventually happen to print media everywhere,
right,
else. I think, again, there are many things about these Facebook results that are interesting. The first one is the company's complete dominance of mobile advertising.
Right.
The second one is the pace at which they're growing, because for a company that did $1 billion in profit last year to do $2 billion in profit this year is huge, right?
Yeah.
This is for the quarter ended June. I think the other interesting thing is the extent to which Google and Facebook dominate overall digital advertising, which means that not only are these guys hitting print, they're hitting other digital media,
right,
even the platforms and the independent companies, by taking a disproportionate share, around 80-85% in some cases. And of course, the numbers also show, as you pointed out in your story, that Facebook's expected advertising revenue this year could actually be larger than the print advertising revenue of all US newspapers, which is another one. I won't call it a point of inflection, because I think the point of inflection happened
earlier,
in 2008, maybe in the United States, when things started going rapidly downhill for print. But I think this is clearly shows how this platform, Facebook is a platform, is really changing the face of the advertising industry. I think digital advertising, even in the US now, has become bigger than television advertising.
Right.
It used to be the hierarchy till last year, I think, in the US was television, digital, and print. Now I think it's become digital, TV, and print.
Right.
And I think what you will see that trend play out in India also. So I think there are significant lessons for media companies here. People will continue to consume media, right? They want news, they want entertainment and everything else. But I think to stay relevant, there are lots of things that people can learn from companies like Facebook.
Right. So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.